Welcome to the Filthy Spoon Podcast. I'm John, and I'm doing a solo one here with a really cool guest that's been on before, Tom Harry. Let's get to the sponsors and get them out of the way first. Willow Creek Custom Calls for all your calls. His innovative brand call that they use up and down the whole West Coast, basically, and the East Coast. He's got an East Coast variant. Cool call, the Cali Spec. He mentioned on here that he might be coming out with a whistle. I think that'd be a cool thing. I'm going to push him to try to do that. His Mallard calls, you know, he's got everything you can think of. And he's doing about everything in-house now, too. So that's pretty impressive. Watch his videos on Instagram. It's pretty neat watching his mill work and everything. So, and his lathe, he's got that new lathe, too. So pretty cool stuff. And you get a hold of him at willowcreekcustomcalls.com. Or you can call him or text him at 510-610-7625. Then on Superior Equipment Repair for all your truck equipment needs, from, you know, heavy equipment, farm machinery. We got a new super sharp ag guy. Any of you farmers, we got, you know, ag covered, construction equipment, John Deere, Caterpillar, Case. We got about everything covered. So big trucks, little trucks, Ford F-150s up to 550s, Chevrolets, Dodges, we do it all. So give Superior Equipment Repair a call or look us up at SuperiorEquipmentRepair.com. You can get a hold of us at 530-888-0795. And Pinto Ridge Taxidermy, old Adam Oliver over there in Colusa, man, pumping out the friggin' awesome mounts. Can't wait to see what old Ivan from Salinas Valley Outdoors gets that banded gadwall his boy shot. I can't wait to see that thing done up. And he's going to give one of our lucky guests at Duck Days. We're going to announce the winner of who's going to win the free mounted bird. So that'll be cool. And then last but not least, the Jeremy's over there at Official Left Coast Waterfowl, peddling our shirts, our Filthy Spoon shirts. We got the traditional logo, the drunk duck, the square duck, hat, shirt, shirts, hoodies, all kinds of different stuff they're selling over there. And, of course, they have their own line, their Waterfowl Widow line that people seem to like. And then now his new innovative turkey pattern. I hope some of you guys get on that because it's a pretty cool hoodie. I'm not a hoodie guy, but I like this one. So get on it. And you can look them up at officialleftcoastwaterfowl.com and give them a follow on Instagram at officialleftcoastwaterfowl on Instagram. And with no further ado, we are back out here at the White Mallard in the off season talking with Tom Harry. How's it going, Tom?
Hey, good, John. How are you? Good to be back, man.
Yeah, guys, thank you. You let me know last week that, hey, maybe we come out here and make it work, and here we are again. And I couldn't be more appreciative that we're out here sitting on your deck again having a good time.
That's what it is.
That's what it is, yeah. And we were talking a little bit before we got on here. We're going to go try to chase the turkeys around a little bit tomorrow. We'll see. I seen some on the way in, so you never know. But we were talking about how duck season starts February 1st is what you were saying.
Yeah. It does. For the crazy hunter guys that have the sickness,
yeah,
that's when it starts. There's so much planning that goes on starting then. And, you know, your plan for your grounds, your plan for your planting. If you have the ability to plant food plots, this year we are doing, in our corn plots, we're doing six passes of corn, one pass of Milo, six passes of corn, one pass of Milo, about 15% Milo.
Ah.
And what that does is the Milo matures first and gets the birds in early, and they come in to eat it, and they're there, and they have corn for the shelf, and they find the corn, so the birds imprint earlier.
Yeah, they stay.
And they stay because they have food early.
Yeah.
Usually, when you just have corn, which is what we've had in the past, it takes until it gets cold for them to find the corn. Usually about, you know, I'd say 2 weeks after season, the wood ducks find it.
Yeah.
And they big wood duck populations. And then after that, the mallards start coming in and they find it. And then if you have food there, they stay. If you don't overshoot them and, you know, treat them right. So.
Yeah, and the corn offers more than just food. It, like you say, it's the cover. Because they like getting in there and kind of hiding, right?
Oh, yeah.
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 You know, I know it seemed like when we were out here last year and we're coming back and, you know, on the road, you know, you see a bunch of them jumping out of there. And they love just getting in there and hiding and ain't just eating. So.
Yeah. So if you have the ability to grow food, it's a big deal in the sink.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty interesting to me because, like you say, it starts February 1st. And for a lot of guys that, you know, maybe don't own their own ground, we got decoys to put away and side-by-sides to wash and stuff like that. But here, if you don't handle your business from February 1st on, you're not going to have the ducks here because you're constantly doing something.
There's so much work, so much planning, doing the disking.
Yeah.
Doing the mowing, doing the mosaic mowing, if you have it and you have the food, planting water grass, smartweed, all that stuff adds to it, and getting it ready for opening day when the regular hunters show up opening day and just want to shoot.
Yeah, exactly. And it's so all this work that was put into it.
It's a ton of work and a ton of money.
Yeah.
But a lot of guys do it. They're all private. They spend the money for duck hunting and getting the ducks. And they're not our ducks. They're everybody's ducks.
Well, that's just it. This habitat that you guys are providing by doing this, you know, there's not a net over this place. They're flying into the other public rice fields and the refuges and everywhere else. So it benefits everybody at, you know, on the, you know, you're footing the load for it, you know, and guys like you. And sometimes I think some of the younger guys or refuge guys might not appreciate the amount of work that goes into this private habitat that benefits all of us and, you know, conservation in general, you know.
And a lot of guys do it.
A lot of guys do it.
A lot of guys that have the ability to do it here in the sink. And there's not, I say there's a lot of guys. Percentage-wise, there's not a lot of guys in the sink that have the ability to grow crops.
Yeah.
But the ones that do provide habitat, food for ducks.
Yeah.
And try and keep them here for the season.
Yeah. And I say that's really important for, you know, the population overall and for hunting. Because like you say, a storm day, you know, these birds are all over the place, you know.
Exactly.
Now they got tracker information. They don't always just stay here. They'll cover some miles in a day. You know?
Yeah.
So I think it's great. I think it's super interesting. And, you know, I'm sure even still now, you guys have been doing it for years, but you tinker with things. Okay, we did just like this Milo thing.
Yeah, it's a new one. So it's a new thing.
Yeah, so this is a new thing you're going
to
try.
A new thing to try. And it's worked up north, and we're going to try it. And hopefully it works, and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, talking about
after season or during season or something, we'll see.
If it worked, like
a complete shithole, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, that wasn't my idea. I just agreed to try it. Yeah.
Right.
But no, that's what, you know, hunting's about. It's, you know, trying different things, and it just, like I say, I never heard of a tactic like that, but that's neater than hell.
You know, the old saying is insanity, doing the same thing, expecting different results.
That's a fact.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're, you know, hunting, you know, the same place over and over, not changing it up, and you're not having success, better change something. So,
yeah,
that's pretty interesting. And we were talking a little bit, and I had no idea about this, about the 1923 water agreement for the sink.
Yeah, what happened in 1923, the land north of us, Durham, can't remember the other.
Durham, I guess Oroville's a little
north. From here north.
Yeah.
They wanted to develop into rice. But they could not flood someone. You can't increase natural flows without an easement. So what they did, they came to these clubs in 1923 and said, hey, we will drop our water, bring it to you, and give you free water. So many clubs in the sink, I want to say 30 out of 35, something like that, signed up for it.
Yeah.
So when the water drains out of the rice clubs down through Butte Creek, it comes in bifurcation and goes to all the clubs and fills them, gravity, for free.
Yeah. That's pretty neat. Yeah.
Yeah. So most of the clubs have, and the ones that don't have to pump their own water or get water some other way.
Yeah. That's quite a benefit. And, you know, we've talked about these what's the other big one? Pre-1914 water rights. No, on the Sac River, that's a big one.
Yep.
You know, that Sabaya Duck Club we had on, they have pre-1914 water rights over there, and it's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
And I'm sure over the years, people have tried to rescind it or take it back or, hey, we don't mean it no more. And
yep.
But, you know.
No, the Butte Sink has been sued probably 3 times by the water district trying to get them to pay, and they prevailed every time. We have these rights. We sign this up, and that's it, and it's still free.
That's pretty interesting, and it's good. And like I say, and it's good for all duck hunters, too, you know, that every year, pretty much, this place is going to have water, you know.
Yeah, well, this was the spot for over 100 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's world-renowned. I mean, some of the best duck hunting in the world, I would think. Most definitely the Pacific Flyway and the country. I mean,
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, we're probably, and there's Arkansas, there's different things, but this is one of the best.
Yeah, and so historic, too. You know, it just, everybody knows. And another thing, you were talking about how it changed, you know, because, you know, you hunted, your father hunted, your grandfather hunted, and it was so much different with the way rice is handled now.
Yeah, well, so what's happened over time, I'm going back to my grandfather, 1950s. There was a Klamath Basin, which everything migrated. All the northern flight migrated to, like a funnel, to the Klamath Basin. And they left the Klamath Basin when it froze and went here to the Butte Sink.
It was like clockwork, too.
It was clockwork. There was no other competition. That was it. They killed them. They did it. It worked. And then I want to say maybe in the 60s, they developed refuges, Sacramento and Delavan.
Yeah.
And that provided habitat and sanctuary for a lot of birds. And it actually hurt their hunting.
Yeah.
Back then. But there was still enough.
Still
birds.
Good, yeah.
Still really good. And then in the, I want to say, 70s, 80s, they quit the rice burn.
And yeah, it must have been a slow deal, because I even remember the late 90s, you know, still doing it a little bit, because you remember the valley just being
You can still
up.
Rice burn today.
Just a percentage, right?
But it's, you have to apply for it.
It's a bunch.
It's very limited, and... So what happened was it went from burning rice.
And they burn everything, so it would be blacked out.
It was a black sky.
I mean,
it was black in the 70s and 80s. It was black. And now it's decomp water.
Yeah.
What that did, it added 140,000 acres of extra water for ducks to land on.
Yeah.
And breed and, you know, hang out. So it spread the ducks out. So that actually hurt the sink.
Yeah.
And then the third thing that happened, probably, I would say from the 90s on, private clubs.
Yeah, these monster places.
Places that you know, one guy owned or two guys owned, and they would make these giant refuges, and these hunt around it and hunt it very lightly.
Yeah.
And they would hold, you know, 1,000,006 birds, same as a refuge.
Yeah.
And you know, Rancho Esquant. Bird Haven, and that's, and there's more, and that also hurt the hunting in the sink clubs.
Yeah.
So it gave them, so we went from being the funnel to us.
To where everything.
To refuges, to water in the, decomp in this whole sink and beyond.
Oh yeah, and well beyond.
And
yeah.
Private refuges. So that's where we're at now. So now hunting has gotten difficult, more difficult. Duck hunting has gone downhill. The amount of ducks, and they're spread out.
Yeah.
So you have to do something in your club to, the pie is only so big.
Yeah.
So how do you get more of the pie for your place and less for somebody else? You have to attract them somehow. So it's through, A, if you have the ability to plant food.
Yeah.
That's number one. B is taking care of your grounds. Managing your grounds, disking, getting the habitat right, getting the weeds right, getting the noxious weeds out, planting water grass, planting smart weed, doing mosaic mowing. There's lots of tactics you can do to increase your pie, your slice of pie.
Yeah.
And that's what we try and do.
And a lot of that, and also with the hunting practices, like you were talking about it, the sub-gauge thing. You know, that's a little bit of a way to try to keep the birds on.
Yeah, you know, that's a discussion amongst a lot of clubs. And, you know, when I started hunting, it was all 12 gauges. Yep. Everybody shot 12s. And you shoot, you bang, you shoot, and you bang. And some clubs started shooting 20s, 20s only.
Yeah.
And then other clubs went to sub gauges, 20s, 28s, 410s. And in the clubs up in Idaho, they're all sub-gauge. They're all 410s or 28s or less.
Yeah.
So what happens is concussion, the sound of the shot doesn't affect the birds as much. And I truly, I was not a believer in the sub-gauge thing.
Yeah.
I like my 12. I want to kill the birds. I don't want to chase them.
Yeah.
But now the loads are so different with apex and different shells and bismuth, tungsten matrix.
Yeah.
I mean, it changes everything with the 20. And we actually, to one of our clubs here, we went to all 20s a couple years ago. And I have to admit, it made a difference.
Yeah.
When you're shooting just 20s, just the shot, just the sound of the shot and the carry of the shot and the concussion. And keep, if you have a place to keep birds, and it's really about that. It really doesn't matter if you're not holding birds.
Yeah, if you're just kind of shooting,
if
you
you're
know,
shooting
traffic.
Traffic, it really doesn't matter. Kill them, shoot them, boom. But it helps everybody around you when you're shooting 20. Guys close.
Yeah.
And it did make a difference at our place down here.
Yeah, and like I'm saying, the more it gets popular, because I'm not 20 myself yet, because the whole place ain't, if our neighbors ain't in the rice, ain't shooting it, you're not really doing a whole lot. But in a situation like this, a whole club, and then the neighboring clubs are doing the same thing, and then it's just a lot less noise going on running these birds out of here. And there's been a bunch of studies on it that it's true.
It is. And if you, I mean, there's places that we hunt where we're in the trees.
Yeah.
And the trees really echo the sound. If you have 12 gauges in the trees, it sounds like cannons.
Oh, yeah.
20 gauges, way less. 4/10 is almost like nothing.
Yeah, it's almost like
and
a pop
I mean,
gun, yeah.
There's guys now here that take their 4/10 and shoot. That's what they shoot.
Yeah.
And with the shells you can shoot now, it works.
Oh, yeah. No, it's pretty impressive.
So I'm hoping that what I want is a, because all the 4/10 now are doubles at the most.
Yeah.
I want to get a auto 4/10, but they make, there's not many people that make them. They're not that good.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, there's a Turkish version. I forget what it's called. And two cheapo versions, but they're
TriStar.
Yes, TriStar. And they're not very
good.
Yeah,
somebody make a little bit better quality.
I'm hoping that Beretta or Benelli comes out with the auto 410, and I'm buying one.
With the revolution of the sub-gauge thing, I'm sure they will eventually, you know.
I hope so. The majority of the shooters aren't going to do that.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them. You know, they go to the refuge and everybody else is shooting 12s and reaching out and stuff. But with the shells, and that's what people don't realize, if you get really good ammo, it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
But you shoot way less.
Yeah.
Way less.
Yeah.
And
it kills them. You know, I mean.
Oh, I can't talk well enough about the Apex shells.
Yeah.
The Apex guys, they got it down. With the 20 gauge, you can shoot a goose at 50 yards and stone it.
Yeah, it's impressive stuff. Yeah.
It's impressive. And, and there's so much more shot.
Yeah, what size shot you use?
Nines.
Nines, yeah.
Nines.
Yeah.
It's like less than doves.
Yeah.
But there's, you know, 600 pellets or something in a round.
And I think that.
In a 20 gauge.
I agree. We were talking about this. I don't know if it was on here or not, but yeah, I think me and Brad Jones are talking about it a little bit more, because even with the steel, I'm shooting a lot of fours, and then I shoot some bismuth, and I like fours, and I was in Mexico shooting 7.5, you know, no, they work. The more BBs, they don't have to be a big old BB, the
big
more,
difference
the
is too, it's speed and density.
Yeah.
It's ballistics, and I don't shoot steel. When they came out with steel, I shot the first year and hated it.
Oh, yeah.
Hated it. I went to bismuth. That was the old bismuth.
Yeah.
It was a dirty shell, but it was good. So I would advise anyone to drop steel and go to a non-toxic shot. First is the cheapest is probably bismuth.
Yeah.
And then matrix and apex.
Yeah.
And they're all really good shells. Really good shells. And the ballistics and the ammo makes a huge difference in shooting. You shoot less shots. You shoot less on the water to kill them, and, you know.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, what you're wanting to do, that's the one thing that connects you with the bird. You can buy all the camouflage you want and the gadgets and everything else. You know, if you're a young guy working on a budget or something, maybe put a little bit more money into the freaking shells that's actually killing the birds instead of the,
exactly. Well, if you think about it, if they're not paying for a place to hunt.
Yeah.
And they have all the gadgets and all that stuff. And a shell, a steel shell costs a buck.
Yeah.
A shell. And these other ones cost $2 or $3. But you shoot way less, but you get more birds.
Yeah.
So it's a trade-off, but I would advise...
Yeah, give a shot. See how you do.
I would advise try and do that. Trade up a little bit because it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, but just know if you can't shoot, if you're missing, you're still going to miss.
The good ones miss just like that. Exactly. If you're not a good shooter, you're wasting money.
Exactly. Yeah, so I just know a lot of guys that this stuff ain't no better. It's like, yeah. Well, it's because you ain't any better.
If you do a three-shot whiff, it's $3 or $9, depending on what you're shooting.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, choose your shots. You got
to be able to shoot well.
Yeah.
And get them close. Don't scrape.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Get them in.
Don't
be a skyscraper.
Let them come by one more time.
Yep.
Makes a big difference. And it makes a big difference. You're hunting, you know, together and, you know, birds are working and they're, you know, 35 yards. You could take them and get a couple maybe.
Yeah.
But if you turn them and they come right in, you might get three or four.
Yeah.
It makes a big difference in your day.
Exactly. And they add up quick. When you do it that like that, yeah.
Yeah, if you have two guys that shoot and shoot right, and, you know, you got to – I always tell my buddies when we go hunting, we're sitting in a blind like we are here, and, okay, look, this is out front, this is out back. And my side, your side.
Yeah.
Or left and right, your side, my side. And I said, if they're coming from your side, I shoot the front bird, you shoot the back. If you come from my side, I shoot the back, you shoot the front. If you come straight on, you shoot your side, I shoot my side. And it saves on, everybody wants to take the easiest shot.
Exactly.
But get two instead of one.
Exactly. And that's a good way to line it out before the hunt.
Before the hunt. Even with experienced hunters.
Yeah, because everybody's going to go for the close bird.
Exactly. You know? And I said, no, here's how we're going to do it. So it helps a lot.
With getting more of them down. I believe that completely. Because, like, when we hunt in Mexico, hunting 4 to 5 guys lined up, and you drop on a bird, it falls. You drop on a bird, it falls.
Yeah. Everybody's
shooting the easy ones, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, that is good advice. You know, line that out beforehand, too. Yeah, the mosquitoes are getting bad here. Yeah. All right. We're going to take a little break here, but we will be back momentarily. And we're back. Okay, well, now we're going to talk a little bit about decoys and electronics, because old Tom here is quite the gadget guy, huh?
Oh, God.
It's been this way for a long time, huh?
I've tried everything. Every single thing that moves and does, I've tried it all. I try it, upgrade it, sell it, you know, go on to different things. So, yeah, I would say now I'm trying to – there's pre-robo season.
Yeah.
Which are still nothing but swimmers.
Yeah.
So I've had the Higdon swimmers and have 8 or 12 of them.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. But they're a hassle to plug in and charge and quit, and they get plugged up, and there's different things that happen. And then I went to these other decoys that are a spreader. I can't remember the name of them.
I've seen them, but I've never seen them in person. But yeah, it spreads them out, what, 5 or 6 decoys?
There's five on a spreader, and you drop it down, and the motor's down below, and the motor moves 5 at a time, and they swim back and forth, and you mix them with block decoys.
Okay.
Mix, so they're swimming and ducks around and different things. And it's a good setup with movement early.
Okay.
And only, you have to charge four batteries.
Yeah.
Every time. So I'm trying to get my battery things down to a minimum.
Okay, yeah, because I'm sure you had a million extension cords and freaking.
So after still season, let's call it, when robos come out, it's a different
December
game.
December 1st,
right? December 1st, different game. So I run about 5 mojos. And blocks. I don't use the swimmers anymore. And the decoys I run are mini mojos. And they run on AA batteries, so I don't have to charge anything.
Yeah.
And they last about 3 hunts. Then I change them out. So I'm going for the less maintenance,
the convenience,
easy button thing. Yeah. And then, you know, there's a big debate about, you know, well, robos don't work after a certain time and they flare and all that stuff. And I know guys in the sink that hunt, and one guy that shoots more mallards than most people, Skip Rust, he hunts robos all till the end of the season.
Really?
Yeah. And he will say, you will lose some, they'll flare, but you'll get more. You'll gain more than you lose.
It's an interesting theory on it.
That's his theory. And, you know, some people say we, you know, shut off the mojos and just go blocks. But if there's no motion, you gotta go motion. You gotta have some motion at some point.
Something's gotta be out there, yeah.
So unless there's wind.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Fine. Yeah. Then the decoys look pretty lively by themselves.
Yeah, so it's a debate, but you know, who knows?
Yeah, yeah, everybody's got, and every day's different. They might work this day, but the next day they don't, you know.
Yeah, well, I've told you that, you know, when it comes to setup, hunting, grounds work, you have 10 guys in your club, you have 11 opinions.
Yep, exactly.
One guy's got two.
Exactly.
Everybody's got a different opinion about how it should be. Let's cut the blinds down. I can't see the teal coming in. We're like hunting mallards, look up. And it's, you know, you have to. It works the best to just have somebody that runs the grounds that says, this is how I'm doing it.
Yeah, because if not, gets done.
They can't take direction. The grounds guy can't take direction from 10 people or 20 people.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
Yeah, sorry, this guy told me to do this. So, yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. We have the same debate in our club. We have a roll top we installed in one of our rice blends. And I'd say 75% of the guys love it. If you know how to hunt out of it, the thing's deadly.
Yeah.
And then we got a couple guys that think it's the worst thing in the world. They, you know, and it just, well,
you'll never,
sorry,
please,
you're
everybody.
Outnumbered. You know,
you won't please everybody.
You can't get everybody happy.
You have to go majority rule.
That's just it. Now, I've made some conversions on my roll top when I kind of show guys how I hunt it and how it seems to work. Oh, man, you're right. This ain't bad. But, yeah, but you're right. Yeah, but that's a great way to put it. Because, yeah, 10 guys, 11 different opinions. Because you're true. Right. And it don't matter if you're hunting at the white mallard or you're the refuge. Nobody can agree. Oh, no, I don't think we should put them over there.
Lots of ways to do things.
Yeah, that's part of duck hunting. Like I often joke, you know, the worst thing about duck hunting is duck hunters sometimes, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, we all get along for the most part, but yeah, it gets a little dicey out there once in a while. So you probably, how do you remember when you first got your first mojo? I mean, it wasn't a mojo then. It would have been a robo duck or whatever it was. Were you a super early adopter being the gadget guy?
That's when I was not in the club. When the mojos hit, I was not in the club.
I see.
I didn't have a club, so I was just a professional guest back then.
Yeah, and you're not going to show up with this wacky thing that's spinning.
Well, no, I did. I showed up with some stuff and go, hey, check this out, and tried it, and, you know, guys, you know. So you got to show up with something.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, maybe they like it, maybe they don't, but we tried it. But I would say the best mojo thing in the sink still is the blade.
Yeah, you really like that goal post blade.
The goal post, yep.
Yeah.
Yep. It attracts them from way up, and it gets them down looking where they normally wouldn't.
Yeah.
And it helps.
Now, have you been running them consistently for years, or did you just find them again? How did you?
I would say I've been running, I ran the goalpost early, and then I went to all mojos, and then I went back to goalpost and mojos.
Okay, yeah.
You got to mix them, I think, to help get the high birds looking, and they start working.
Yeah, because I remember when we hunted last year, I think you had, you know, four or five mojos, and I think two of them goalposts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, there's what looks like Disneyland out there.
That's the combo. I mean, that's the, you know, perfect set in a normal world.
Yeah.
If there's no wind and stuff, but you know, wind ducks are good too. We use when there's wind, we don't take our mojos. We use wind ducks are great.
Yeah, exactly. You don't got to trick them.
Refuge guys use them too, right?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they're good. They like that motion, and you put them on a pole that moves a little bit instead of a stiff pole.
Yeah.
I put them on PVC pipe, and they
give you a little bit of motion too.
A little more side motion. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Who knows?
Who knows? It's all worth a shot, you know. You got to mix it up. And
yeah, every day's different. And, you know, some days you're out there and you call and the bird's working. You think of the best caller ever. Next day you can't get shit.
That's exactly the way it goes.
That's
exactly
how it happens. You know, it makes you feel like you're a super caller and then you're shit.
Exactly, yeah. Fishing will be that way, man. You go to a spot, man, I caught freaking 20 fish here yesterday and now none.
Correct.
You know. So we mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're going to do a little bit of turkey hunting tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to try.
Yeah.
Well, tomorrow and the next day, Sunday too.
Yeah. Oh, Sunday too. Cool.
No, Sunday's Sutter Butte, yeah.
Oh, sweet.
That's the real turkey hunt. Tomorrow's just a drive around.
Oh, just fray around. Okay, cool. Awesome.
So we'll see what happens. But
yeah, it's worth a shot. I saw a few on the way in here, so you never know. The weather's better now. It's been a rough opening 3 weeks for a couple guys.
Yeah, I think it's about perfect timing for these guys.
I think so. The weather's right. The sun's out.
Yep. They'll be gobbling.
They'll be gobbling, yeah. You know, first couple weeks, they weren't gobbling. And, you know, turkeys are, you know, kind of the opposite of ducks. They want it warm. You know, well, the mallards like the sun, you know. That gets them out. But, yeah, it's not, you want clear, warm, sunny weather from my experience. They say a turkey would drown in a rainstorm because they're so dumb they'll just look up until their mouth's open until they drown. But I don't know. When you're chasing some of these wily things around, I think it might be a little bit smarter than that sometimes. But.
Well, when you talked about sunny days, I can tell you in the sink, because guys say, hey, it was a big rainy storm. You guys must have killed them. We said, no, not at all. In the sink, it's sunny days and windy days when you get them. In a rainstorm, it's really hard in a south wind, especially on the east side of Butte Creek.
Yeah.
The west side of Butte Creek, for some reason, here at White Mallard and other place, we can get them.
Yeah.
But over there, all those clubs in a south wind, except the Lonsar gets them. That's it.
Really?
Yes. It's not good.
That's just odd.
South wind storm.
And been that way forever.
Been that way forever. Don't know why.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys won't even go.
Really?
Yep.
What about when you get a north wind here? How's it?
Oh, everybody comes north wind. Every both sides get them good.
Yeah.
North wind makes all the difference.
Yeah.
It's a good, north wind's a good thing. So I hunt the weather.
Yeah.
When the weather looks good, I'm going. If I can go any day.
Yeah.
I don't say I'm going Wednesday because I can hunt Wednesday because I don't have, work or whatever, I can do it.
Yeah.
I hunt when I can hunt.
Yeah.
And it makes a big difference if you can do that. Hunt the weather.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
whether you're in a refuge or rice blind, hunt the weather.
I do the same thing at work. I got to be there. I try to minimize my time off during summer when everybody else taking vacation and stuff. And if it's storm day, you see what we got coming in? We got a big north wind.
Yeah.
I ain't going to be here Wednesday.
Yeah, it's time to go.
And my boss, he's a hunter too, so he's understanding of it. But yeah, same deal. I go when I can because that's just the way I am. I ain't working on the weekends. I'm going. But I do chase the weather too. If there's a weekday, man, I got to get out there. I can't.
If you can, yeah.
If you can, you know. I think a lot of guys do that. You know, I remember going to the refuge, thinking, there won't be nobody out there. It's a Wednesday. You know, a lot of people at work go out there, freaking 200 people in line. It's pretty interesting. We were talking a little bit before, too, about the California public land hunter is probably one of the most deadly hunters in the country, you know.
That's true. No, the guys that grew up as kids, especially kids, hunting the refuges, became very good hunters.
Yeah.
I know many of them, and they do it. They put the sweat equity in, and they learn how to do it, learn how to call, learn how to get them, and they're good. It's just hard to get on sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's tough. I mean, if a guy's patient, you can sit there all day, and you end up getting on in the afternoon sometimes. But, you know, a lot of guys, that's just where – I mean, that's how I started hunting, and then obviously I haven't made it to a white mallard level yet. Or if I ever do, but then once you get in the, there's a lot of ducks at the refuge, though. So, like, even with us, we lease private ground. And Robert and me, we talked about this, you know, co-host of the show. We should have got off our butt earlier and moved to the refuge because they just never showed up in the rice, especially in District 10. They just never got there. Yeah. And we kind of did the stupid, as you say, how
same
do you cry of insane?
Yep, same
We'd
thing.
Be out there every weekend. We know.
Expect a different result.
Yep. And it's like, well, maybe they're going to be here now. Maybe he'd be out there driving. I don't really see a lot of rounds. Well, we'll see. And we kind of, we never did it. So this year, because I'm a little, we can talk about predictions a little bit because we're going to have another 500,000 acres of rice flooded in this valley again, which is good. I mean, it is a good thing. There's plenty of water. It's good for the local bird nesting, all this water. It's good for the farmers. It's good for the rice guys like me, guys that, you know, in the drought years that don't get water. We always got water. We got good, you know, water sources on the east side over there. Water's a lot more readily available, so we never don't not have water. Uh-huh. But I'm really nervous. If we get another winter that never get cold like last year was, it's going to be another tough go for everybody.
Yeah, what happened last year, you're saying about the cold. When it gets really cold, the birds want the carbs and they go in the corn.
Yeah.
And nobody got birds in the corn last year.
Yeah, I believe it because it never made
it didn't. It just, even if you had good corn, they just didn't come in. It wasn't cold enough for them.
No, they weren't. You know, there were birds down here, and there's a big push, and I've heard some different theories. A lot of people think our big chunk of birds came down early and passed us, and I don't know about that. Maybe there's some truth to it. I don't know.
They move back and forth. They might move the delta. The delta shoots the shit out of mallards for a while and geese. And but this year I've heard, I don't know if it's true, but Klamath is going to flood a whole bunch more, which way more than they have in the last 2 years.
I was up there 2 weeks ago because I wanted to see it myself, and I did. Tule Lake is full, and they were flooding the Klamath, lower Klamath. Now, the water is basically off now, though. I don't know why. I don't know who friggin' turns it on and off, but at this point, they've shut it off. There's a lot of water there at the moment. I don't know when it's going to come back on. I'm sure CWA and probably DU and Delta, everybody else is clamoring, trying to figure it out. But it's off as we speak, which makes me nervous because it's April.
Well, I'm hoping that what I've heard is right. They said the mallard hunting is going to get way better this year because there's going to be way more birds come down from the north and stay there.
Yeah.
Come down the funnel to the Butte Sink. So.
Yeah, because Tule Lake's been dry. I mean, and Klamath, northern Klamath, or the lower Klamath, it's dry. I mean, just, I was up there and I seen it, and you see it all flooded up and where all the weeds were because it's been dry. No, it was a beautiful sight, you know, and I seen so many birds up there, and it was beautiful. I was under the impression they were going to keep the water on, and as of now, it is not on.
Okay.
So let's all hope and bother your local politicians, and let's get that freaking valve open back up.
Well, I can tell you that duck hunters are the most optimistic people there are.
Yes, they are.
Everybody's thinking the next day is going to be good, and ducks are going to come in, and it's going to be good tomorrow, and that's what keeps us going.
That's what keeps us going, because, yeah, if you're
there's always hope.
There's always hope, no matter
the
what.
The next day, hunting with shits yesterday, tomorrow might be good.
That's just
and it. It does get good.
Yeah, and then you get a day.
You just got to be there.
Yeah, you got that.
You got to hunt.
That's why I say go when you can go.
You got to go.
You're right. And I've had days where, like, yeah, I don't have high hopes today, you know, with the full moon last night or whatever. Go out and smoke the shit out of them, you know.
Yeah.
And then vice versa. Oh, man, we got everything conditioned. We got a north wind or a south wind, you know, whatever. And then go out there and not do very well. So.
Yeah.
It's funny.
I've had north wind hunts and there's just no birds. And
yeah.
All the conditions are right. And if you don't have birds, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. I would think, as much as I've seen the water in Tule Lake, that's going to have to stay up some. Because that's fully flooded. Now, it's obviously going to lose some water over the summer and everything, but hopefully they get some more water. CWA always finds, they'll buy water from a farmer, they'll do something, so hopefully they do it. And that'll really help you guys with the mallards, because, you know, that's where the mallards come from.
Oh, yeah, if they nest and live there and raise their brood, it'd be good, hopefully. So we're all hoping for a better year, because last year was probably, I've heard from many people, the worst year they've had in their whole life.
That is a very common statement from a lot of people.
I would say that, yeah.
You know, that a lot of people was definitely the worst and hardest. I know for me personally, I think it was probably my worst. I mean, our other Sutter Blind did okay some days, but our D10, they just, They never showed up over there. They just never did. We'd go out and get our sprig and go home.
Well, D10 is usually really good early.
Yeah.
You get your sprig and geese.
Oh, yeah, big time.
You get the specks, which yep. are a lot of fun. Specks are so funny.
They were so funny this year. They were round, but they were all snobs, yeah. 200 yards high. They want nothing to do with anything.
Well,
you know?
There was a couple years, I would say 4 or 5 years ago here, and the geese came in heavy here. And they ran all the mallards out. So all we had was goose shooting.
Really? Yeah, at the white mallard?
In the duck blinds.
Really?
In a blind. You put goose decoys out, and we get 20 specks in an hour.
Really?
Yes. It was fun. I did it 4 times in a row, got 20 specks.
Wow.
It was really fun, and it hasn't happened for the last 3 years.
That must have been like kind of the height of the drought or something, maybe.
I don't know what it was. Something happened where the geese were here for some reason. They ran the mallards out, and that's all you could shoot. But we shot them. So it was fun.
That is cool, man. Hopefully you got plenty of pictures of that, because that probably don't happen all that often.
Well, it happened once.
Yeah, exactly.
And I shot a blue goose. I thought it was a speck. There was a bunch of snows flying over, and I thought it was a blue goose.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah. In a general year, how many you guys don't shoot a lot of geese here, most years,
oh,
right?
That year we shot over 1,000 specks.
Wow.
That year.
But a general year, guys get a couple, right?
I don't even know what it was last year. Not that many.
Yeah.
No, nowhere close.
Yeah. So you guys must have all the, from the beginning, right? All the duck logs going back?
Yeah. Somewhere.
Somewhere?
Yeah. Somewhere they have them, yeah.
Yeah, thank God there's no fire, nothing probably, or anything like that.
Yeah, I know. But what's happened here in this club, and there's been transition of members over the years.
Yeah.
And there was guys that hunted a lot here.
Yeah.
A lot. And with the price of memberships you have, the guys buy, they have a lot of other things they do.
Yeah.
At that level, right?
Yeah, I can see that.
So they don't hunt as much. So our hunting pressure's gone way down from what it was 5 years ago.
Oh, even just 5 years ago.
Oh, yeah, way down. I mean, really? The amount of hunts we've had here with members, the pressure is way less.
Okay.
But the hunting's been way less, too.
Yeah.
So kind of equalizes, but yeah.
No, that's kind of interesting, you know, such an historical property. And, you know, I'd love to somehow hear the history. How did it become the white mallard? Would somebody 100 years ago shoot a white mallard out here? And
yes.
Is that what it came to be?
Well, there's one in the club, in the draw room, a white mallard. And they were here for many years. In fact, when I joined in 17, I was hunting the other club south of us.
Yeah.
And I saw one.
Oh, really?
And I didn't register quick enough, and it just flew by.
Ah.
I just shot that fucker. Yeah, I just shot him. But, no, there's a white mallard. There was a group of them here back then, and I guess somebody shot one. It's called the white mallard. But this club was originally formed for, even in the way back, bylaws, it was for the farm people, working people, not
really.
It wasn't made for
big
money guys.
Really?
No. It was designed for that.
Really?
And, but years ago it was pretty much rice, and they developed the whole thing into natural.
Yeah. And what about, you know, what years they turned it back to natural?
No, I don't know exactly. I would say probably in the 70s, yeah, 80s, somewhere in there.
Sounds about right, yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty neat. It was just kind of
I mean, the sink years ago, I seen a video of Sutter Butte with guys going out in their coats and vest.
Yeah.
Pulling out to their blind, and it was sheet water.
Really?
sheet water. There was no tules or anything back then, or trees.
Really?
Way back in the, you know, 30s, I would say. Shooting ducks and getting them. But in the sink, mallards didn't start happening in the sink until the 70s. The flight changed.
Oh.
The flight changed. The mallards used to be on the west side over by Colusa.
Okay.
And then the sink changed into trees and tules. It was, the sink used to be a sprig deal. Back when the sprig were seven a piece. That's what it was.
Really?
The whole sink. Then it changed to mallards.
Really? That's interesting. With I had no idea.
Yeah, with the transition of rice and tules and habitat.
Yeah, and it just started becoming a mallard.
And everything started funneling here. It kind of funneled from the west side to the east side.
Ah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting.
That's what happened.
Yeah, there's still sprig around here. I know when we were hunting last year, we saw a few.
Oh, no. Yeah, you can shoot sprig here, but they're here and there.
Yeah.
Down south. But on the other side, on the east side, Sutter Butte.
Yeah.
I mean, I used to keep track of them, but a big year for me was shooting six sprig.
Really?
Year. Oh, yeah. It's all mallard habitat.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's all mallard stuff. It's not made for open water, sheet water sprig. No. Nope.
Yeah, it's made to shoot mallards.
Right.
Yeah.
Puddle ducks, yeah.
Yeah, and that club's, you know, about the same age as this one, too, you know.
It's, mm-hmm.
It's definitely a storied history of the Butte Sink, man. It's an awesome place to be. And say, well, once again, I can't say appreciate, you know, how much I appreciate you bringing me out here.
Well, it's fun to be here.
Yeah.
I love it. I love sitting on the deck, looking out, and seeing ducks fly, and
yeah, oh, yeah, no, yeah. You guys can't see it, obviously, but, yeah, we've been watching ducks zipping up and down the water in front of Tom's place right now, and, no, it's just cool. When I pulled up, there were a couple of wood ducks just landing right in front of me. No, it's neater than heck. Yeah. You know, and the springtime in the marsh is always a neat time to me anyway. You know, I'm sure you'll start seeing little baby ducks swimming around probably and all that eventually, you know.
Not too much here in the canal, but, yeah, they're out there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's pretty neat.
Those are our babies.
Yep, we'll be shooting them before you know it, but it's sure nice to watch them now, you know.
Yep, I agree. So, tomorrow's turkey hunting, baby.
Yep.
And Sunday,
turkey
hunting.
Yeah.
Have I told you my story about my first time turkey hunting?
No, let's hear this. The first time you ever turkey hunted, let's hear this.
All right, well, I knew nothing about it, zero. And we had a place up east in Sacramento behind Ranch Maria. We have a ranch up there. So I invited a buddy of mine. So let's go turkey hunting. He says, okay. So he goes and buys a turkey call that night. And none of us have ever hunted. None of us have ever called. We don't know anything about anything. So I called him in the morning on the way up. I said, hey, did you get a call? He says, yeah. I got a diaphragm. I said, okay. I said, how's it sound? He said, great, excellent. I said, can you do it? He says, I'm a master, basically.
Yeah.
This kind of guy is, right? So, okay. So, we get there about 8:30 in the morning, and we unload our stuff and get dressed in our camo, and we look down. We hear turkeys gobbling about 500 yards down this ravine. Well, there's turkeys, okay. So let's go. So we walk. We walk across a levee on a pond. Go back up in this little hidey hole and set our decoy up. And he's behind me. And I'm the shooter, right?
Yeah.
So he calls. Doot, 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 doot. Calls. And we're gobble, gobble, gobble. Right over the hill. It's like, no shit. We look at each other like, are you kidding me? So he calls again. Gobble, gobble, gobble. He calls again. Here comes this sucker. He comes right to our decoy, and I shoot him, and he's a 10-inch beard, my first one. And we're high-fiving, we're thinking, this is easy, this is great. Well, that was the end of that.
Never had a hunt that easy again.
No, nothing ever again. That was it.
That's funny.
Nothing ever again.
So, I've had that happen a couple times, too. That's hilarious. Yeah, it's almost too easy. You know, I've been almost disappointed.
that's how it's supposed to be, but it didn't, doesn't happen that very often.
Yeah, and you always remember it when it does. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they're everywhere in Sacramento, all around my office, my house, everything. I could kick them.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
And then you go hunt them, and they're wily things.
Exactly. It's such a weird deal, ain't it? Yeah, it's like mallards in a park compared to mallards here, you know?
Correct.
Yeah, exactly, you know? So. Yeah, Roseville's full of them. They're everywhere. But, yeah, I haven't had any luck this year yet.
Well, we're going to have some luck. We're going to drive around tomorrow and see what happens. Maybe we can locate some and get on them.
Yeah. We got a crow call today, so.
And then tomorrow afternoon, we're going to go to Sutter Butte. Drive around, do a little crow call, see if we can find where they're roosting. There's a few places they are.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll get one. You guys will. I'm not going to get one. I'm not going to shoot them. I quit.
You're a retired turkey hunter
I'm
now?
I'm a retired turkey hunter, yeah.
Is Curtis showing up here tomorrow or what?
Yeah.
Oh, he's coming tomorrow afternoon or something?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good. I'll have to shoot home for a minute and water and feed my dog, but you know how close I am. It don't matter.
That's fine.
Yeah, I'll do that midday or whatever.
Okay.
She'll be fine till then, but I got to keep an eye on the little dog. Ain't nobody there.
Oh, yeah. So.
No, I'm looking forward to it. I love being in duck habitat outside of duck season also, because I ate up with this, like you say, the sickness, as you call it. Yeah, I mean, that's why I went all the way up Tule Lake just to look at it, and... No, I'm just happy to be out here and, you know, riding around. We're going to see all kinds of cool stuff I've never seen tomorrow.
Well, I'll tell you, I told you before that guys that come up in the off season get the call during season.
Well, I appreciate it, man.
That's how we roll.
Well, wouldn't you?
To hang with me and have fun in the off season and look at stuff and, yeah.
No, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you bringing me back out here. And it's just a beautiful place, lots of fun. And it'd be good. I can't wait to kind of bust Curtis's balls when he gets here a little bit. I'll tell you the story about how he ruined our turkey hunt a couple of weeks ago. And I'll tell you when he's here so like you can hear his take on it. But they have got too impatient.
Oh, no. He goes up on ducks when he shouldn't go up. I have to put a leash on him.
It's the way it was turkey hunt. I'm explaining him, and he's thinking he's just going to walk straight to him. I said, it don't work like this, Curtis. We can just go. I'm telling you. And he was kind of persistent. I'm like, I guarantee it's not going to work, but let's go. Sure enough, we get about 100 yards away, and two of them flew this way, two of them flew that way. He's got to learn some patience.
Yeah, he's got to learn a lot of things.
I love busting Curtis's balls, man. He's a good friend of mine. He finally came on this podcast, too. I don't know if you knew that. But
no, did you do one?
Yeah, he did one.
Did you talk about his club?
Yeah, we did it at his club when we were down there. Yeah, yeah.
Good, good.
No, it was a good time. So,
all right. Yeah,
we love Curtis, and I guess that's about it. It's probably getting pretty close to dinner time, huh?
Yeah.
You got anything else you want to say?
No, I think we're good.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening, and thank you, Tom, for coming on again and hosting me. And we'll give the turkeys hell tomorrow. And for all you people, rate and review. Please, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you listen, rate and review. And we'll talk to you probably this weekend at some point.
Well, we may do another one if we get turkeys.
That's a great idea. We may do it either. You're right. Then we even have Curtis.
A little turkey
here.
Story.
That'd be a great idea. Okay. If we get one, you're probably going to get an extra Tom Harry one. So
all right.
Stay tuned. Pay attention to the Instagram story, guys. Bye.